Madison, Wisconsin is as good as it gets if you are like me and you love the college sports.
This is The Jump Around with Jim Rutledge and Pablo Iglesias, streaming live on the ESPN Madison YouTube channel.
Dancing down the sidelines. Can they catch him? No! The Badgers answer instantly. There will be no undefeated champion on Wisconsin with an unbelievable stretch drive to the championship game.
Gordon again. Inside the five. Touchdown. What a performance by Melvin Gordon.
Chucky Hepburn. Big Ten on the line. Yes!
It's over. The Wisconsin Badgers win 17-9. They are the first Big Ten team ever to win successive Rose Bowl games.
That is the best college sports town in America.
And this is the best Badger sports show. The Jump Around, a Badger-dedicated show live.
That's right.
On the ESPN Madison and the ESPN Milwaukee YouTube channels. I am Jim Rutledge. Pablo Iglesias is in the Everlight Solar Studio. I am in Milwaukee, and we will be joined by Ben Brust coming up a little bit later in the show. And all guests on the show are brought to you by Steinhoffels. Boys, what the hell happened a week ago? There was an old Jay-Z song that featured Too Short. Said it was all good a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
A week ago, we're talking about the Badgers. Could they, you know, Jesse Nelson was with me on Jim, Matt, and Molly saying maybe they're a 5 or a 6 seed. They might be able to get that high. I was hoping maybe for 7. Joe Lunardi still has him at a 7. But after a sensational, remarkable victory, 92-71 over Michigan State, the Badgers just, do you call this laying? Let's start with this. Did they lay an egg? Did they just come back to earth? Did they just not show up? Is Ohio State that much better? Is a bad matchup? Like, what one of those excuses are we going with to explain away what happened against the Buckeyes?
I'm not making any excuse. I'm just going to come straight forward. I would rather have this happen now than down the road. Get it out of your system.
It doesn't have to happen at all, though, Pablo.
And if it does, then why not have
people
it happen
like,
now?
Oh, like, you don't have to crap the bed. You could just not do it.
As much as I would have loved for them to win out the rest of the way, that's just not possible. We know what the Big Ten is, Jim.
Like, they got.
I know that they got trounced. And you know what? Honestly, I didn't see it live in person. I went back and recapped because I was enjoying the Lunar New Year. I was celebrating. I was part of a jubilant. Yes, it was a joyful jubilant. Although there was a with the lion dance, there was an unfortunate mishap. No, I wasn't injured, but hopefully that dancer is okay now. The lion dancer is okay. They were hospitalized, and they are fine. We continued with the celebrations.
What? Yeah. Why are we doing, Pablo?
But anyway,
you can't just do that.
What do you mean?
You can't just do that. Now we have to pause the show here.
Now, instead of basketball.
May they rest in peace. Let's move on. What are we doing?
Brought up a lion dancer who's hospitalized.
Yes, I believe from what I'm
sorry, Pop, you did this to us. We're gonna put a comma right here, and you're gonna tell us the lion story.
Okay, so I was at a local establishment here with one of my friends. We were celebrating the Lunar New Year, Chinese New Year, Gongzi Fa Choi to everybody as well. The year of the horse, wanted to celebrate that. Wanted to be a part of it. And the lion dance, which is very traditional for the Lunar New Year as well. The restaurant I was at, they had a lion dance. They were about to start the drums and everything, the gongs, all the cymbals were going off as we were starting the dance. I started a little late to make sure people were good to go. And then all of a sudden, my friend who was sitting at the window seat, I didn't get to see them outside. He's like, oh boy, somebody is down. And I said, oh no, that's not good. And he was giving me the full play-by-play. And it's kind of like a car crash. Like, you don't want to look, but sometimes you want to peek over a little bit. Hey, what's going on? Unfortunately, it sounds like I think somebody just missed a step, like if they were on the street or if they were on the sidewalk and somebody had a head injury, then they had to stop the show, postpone it, and the ambulance came on by. Thankfully, they continued the lion dance. It was still good luck, prosperity, fortune, and opportunity is still on its way. No. But the show did go on, and we still had a good ringing of the year of the horse.
The lion dancer and the Badgers had a very similar evening, it seems.
Yes, definitely got hit.
That's a professional transition, Riley. I'm rewarding you with the mic there. Go ahead. Well, you're on timeout for the Badger stuff. You'll come back in a second. But, Riley, yes, this does not look like the year of the Badger. The other day.
No, to say the least, it definitely did not watching that game. I was coming back. I missed maybe half of the first half. Was playing intramural basketball. I put up a Tony Snell stat line. I played as well as the Badgers did. It was awful. I was awful. Then I come home.
Wait, did you do better than 7 of 26?
No, I was worse. I was like 1 for 20 and 0 for whatever from 3. So I can sympathize with the Badgers that night. And then I come home. And I'm like, well, at least the Badgers will play well. And nope. But I got to say, I wasn't too unsurprised. You have two very emotional wins over top 10 teams. You have an OT game. Then you bludgeon Michigan State at home. And I wasn't very shocked that maybe they drank a little bit of their own Kool-Aid and then come out, play a team that's fighting for its life in Ohio State, and lay an egg. It's disappointing. But I'm not surprised, and as long as they bounce back against Iowa, I don't think this game will matter. So I'm not worried yet.
How much do you blame Matt LaFleur's terrible post-game speech to the team for this?
It had to have had an impact. It had to have had an impact. I like Matt LaFleur. I want to root for him so bad, but man, does he make it difficult. Like, what was that? It was so lame, and it clearly rubbed off on their performance.
You guys play like that, you're going to be a dangerous team.
The stutter was the worst part.
Jim, you keep questioning and hosting like this. The jump around's going to keep on growing. We're going to be a force to be reckoned with, all right? All right, and then it's like, does he? What octaves does he have, or what higher decibel level does he have? It's so frustrating. But no, I get where you guys are coming from. It's frustrating for me. Why I stand pat on this is, one, again, I think this team can beat anybody in the nation. Still, I'm gonna double down on that. And even though, again, you
apparently
fall flat,
can lose to anyone in the nation.
But my side is that's what college basketball is as a whole. As much as we want to believe the people at the top, let's look at this. That Arizona is now on a two-game losing streak. They lost their number one spot over the weekend. To look at that from the big picture, why does it seem like Wisconsin is can't be a part of that group, right? Why can't Wisconsin be a part of that group as well? Because, again, since we've seen the UMBC upset and since we've seen a couple number ones go down in the tournament, college basketball now all of a sudden has a lot more parity. And if you see this and if you get knocked, granted, you get knocked on your ass heading into March, I would rather have that happening going into March rather than the JMU upset when it happened in March. That's where I'm at. Get this out of your system. Learn, grow, because if anything, I'm very confident in this veteran leadership and where these guys are at.
I get where you're coming from, and it didn't have to happen. It's one thing to lose a game. It's another thing to have over 9 turnovers from your starters, shoot 7 of 26 from 3, just get worked from the beginning. And the Badgers, I get Ohio State's playing for the tournament live, but the Badgers are too in this idea. If you want to know why the Badgers never made the Sweet 16, it's because they have these clunkers of games that then makes them an 8 seed.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're an 8 seed, and then they have an impossible road to the Sweet 16. The Badgers did have an opportunity in front of themselves to play themselves into a 5 seed, and heck, who knows, maybe a 4 seed. If they had played all the way through and won the Big Ten championship, Big Ten title through the Big Ten championship tournament. That's not going to, I mean, if they do that, they're still not getting a 4 seed now. But that could have been in play. This, you're right, Iowa is important. It's just more of it didn't have to happen. This is not an indictment of guard or the players or anything, but it's okay to say, you know what, that sucked. Like, there was no reason for that game to happen. And the players know that. I guarantee Greg Gard and everyone's telling the team, that sucked. To your point, Pablo, put it in the rearview mirror. But I think it's also fair to say, and just call a crappy game, that game was a crappy game.
It was.
Ohio State out-physicaled them. They were more aggressive. You mentioned the JMU game. That sounds like the JMU game.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, I'm never going to be okay with the team just getting, you know, showing up and getting outworked. It's one thing, you're missing shots. They're sloppy with the ball, and they got outworked the whole game. And that's the part that just upsets me, because we are late in the season. I'm fine with a clunker, you just can't shoot. But this was more than just you can't shoot. This was, you didn't show up.
That's fair. But I'm wondering, because right now we've talked about this. For Greg Gard, for the Wisconsin Badgers, the regular season doesn't really matter. You make the tournament. Now you got to get past the Sweet 16. You got to have some tournament success. Does this game against Ohio State, does it worry you about their potential tournament aspirations?
I would rather see how they respond against Iowa on Sunday, because that's a team that's also – I don't believe they're a bubble. They should be –
They just knocked off Nebraska.
Yeah.
They had a great
exactly.
win.
Exactly.
So they're good.
That's the flip-flop of it, too. If you know, one team can knock off Wisconsin and Iowa, yes, they are trending in the direction where, if you want to look at it in terms of are they on upset alert too? No. I think, again, this is where you regroup, you gather. Jim, we've talked about this. We're big Apple TV show fans. Ted Lasso, be a goldfish. Just be the goldfish here. I am more, not worried, but more curious. That's the word I want to use for the Iowa game. How are the
I'm
Badgers?
Being judgmental as hell, to borrow from
well,
I
okay.
am judgmental of that performance. Because... No, I get what you're saying.
Yes,
Bob.
No, that's where
that
I'm at.
It's a perfect opportunity to go with judgmental. It's so late in the year. You're right. This doesn't seal their fate, just like beating Michigan State didn't seal their fate. It's just a reminder that this Badger team is very much rides the roller coaster. And it's frustrating to see that they're still riding the roller coaster. Again, if they had lost like they lost to Indiana, or even without the controversy, let's just say they lose a tight game. Okay, lost the game. Getting just slacked is just, that's the part that bothers me, and it's February. The tournament's around the corner. Does this mean the Badgers are cooked? Absolutely not. But to me, it just is a reminder that the Badgers might be just as likely to show up and kick the snot out of Michigan State as they are to get the snot kicked out of them by Ohio State.
Yeah.
So it's a hard read. It's hard to read this team.
Mm-hmm.
I still think, though, that given who they have with their leadership on the court, Nick Boyd, John Blackwell, Nolan Winter played very well. Loved what I saw from Braden Carrington against Ohio State. I think he's going to be a fun guy to watch in March. Ultimately, I think this Badgers team is a lot more like the one we saw against Michigan State, and that's the one I think will show up come postseason time than the one we saw against Ohio State. That's still where I'm at, and yeah. I still think, at their best, nobody in the country can beat them when they're on their game.
I'm right there with you.
I agree with you. I hope you're right, but obviously they can lose to anyone when they're not on their game. And that's
also true.
The part I don't really want to see. That's the part I was not dying to see at this point in the season. Let's take a little step a different direction here, but let's talk a little bit about a legendary Badger. So all three of us had the opportunity on Monday to go watch Road at Night. And it is the story of Howard Moore, the person, Howard Moore, and the father, the basketball player, the man of faith, all the great things that made Howard Moore truly remarkable and special. And then it obviously documents the tragedy that went on for a lot of his last few years. And it does show triumph through tragedy, even though it was very much a heart-wrenching story. Be prepared to cry if you go see it. But it is something that I would recommend seeing. If nothing else, Howard Moore, it seems like one of those people, and I just covered him. I did not know him very well at all, so I'm not going to pretend that. But I always heard great things about him, and that movie just drove home that he's just one of those people in the world where you're like, this is a special person to walk the earth. And I'll say this, that I wasn't surprised. I knew the story about the Michael Finley, Howard Moore, Rashard Griffith Badger teams. I remember Stu Jackson, Stan Van Gundy. So that part wasn't a surprise to me. I knew a lot about the tragedy, but there's still parts in there that were something that would stick home. And the part that stuck out for me, guys, and I'll ask you guys this as well, is when I think he had two pastors come through Michigan when he was in the hospital. And they were doing prayers for his wife and his daughter who had passed. And then he paused and said, let's make sure we say a prayer for the woman who caused this accident and her family as well. And in that moment, seemed like less than 72 hours after that tragedy, he still was thinking of the person you probably want to think about the least. And so for me, it just really drove home who Howard Moore is, and I hope he continues with his recovery. Pablo and Riley, I'll let you share your thoughts on it, too.
Yeah, it was Riley and I actually sat next to each other, and I think right after the end, both looked at each other, and I said that was powerful. I think that was that moment and how it was all put together and the back and forth of also getting to really know who Howard is, who his story, meeting his wife. I thought there was there were good moments to get to know Howard as the person as well. I mean, again, I've only heard these stories, but to really get that documented, to hear from Michael Finley, to again, everybody always says great things about Howard, and getting all that together, as you said though too, Jim, it was tragic. It was powerful in a way where you again got to know the personality, you got to see how he reacted and what this all meant and how things just changed so fast. And I think a few things that stood out to me was just remembering where I was when the Howard Moore celebration happened. I was in studio, actually. I wasn't on site, but I just remember feeling the elation and feeling the emotion that the Kohl Center had of just watching that back
you're
the
talking
first
about
time.
The celebration.
Yes, yes, the celebration when he came back, when he was wheeled in. I believe that was 2024, mm-hmm. I believe. So just replaying all of that and remembering where I was and just watching those clips again and remembering that, wow, it's you could tell that even through all of these things, you could see him just jumping out of his chair, wanting to talk. Michael Finley saying that we have full conversations, and even though he's not able to talk, or Greg Gard, who I got to wish I got to talk to him a little bit more yesterday. We were at an event together yesterday, and how he could just tell that Howard, there's something inside that he knows that Howard is fighting and is trying to find a way to really be like at full strength. You can tell that he's always that fighter. And again, I could just go on and on about what was so powerful about it. But again, I remember those that specifically and just looking at Riley too, like I said, that just how powerful again and how moving it was.
Yeah, I think you nailed the most impactful scene on the head, Jim. That was the same for me. Like, you hear love your enemies all the time. Yeah. That is, I can't fathom how he was able to have that thought in that horrible of a moment. I cried. I don't cry much when it comes to movies or TV shows or any media. And I shed a tear. It was incredibly powerful. Very moving. I think Jim Polzin described it that he left the theater heartbroken and inspired. And I think that is certainly how I left as well. And it gave me a newfound appreciation. I was also in the Kohl Center for that night when he was honored and made his return. And at the time, I knew he had been in an accident. I didn't really know much else about his story. And it made me appreciate being able to be in the Kohl Center that much more now, seeing the full story and see just how amazing of a human being he is. And I'm very glad his son is still out there and doing well. And yeah, definitely just praying for Howard, his family, and the documentary. A great reminder to hold your family tight and appreciate everything you have. But yeah, it was amazing.
I will say one thing too. What it also reminds, it's what Greg Gard had said when he was on Wilde and Tausch a couple weeks ago to help push out. And also, it's great to see that this is an extended run. I believe it's now through February 26 over at the West Point,
the Milwaukee area as well.
Oh, it's in the Milwaukee area.
Yeah,
awesome.
Through the 26th. Yeah, it's in the Brookfield.
Yep. Yes. So awesome to see that one, it's getting an extended run, and two, it's going even further. And Greg Gard hit it on the head when he was again talking to Wilde and Tausch about this, is that it is a stark reminder of the tragedy that they went through, but it's also a reminder that that this is still something that they go through. This is something that he and his family are still, it's not something that just goes away. And I think for us all of it, Riley, you hit it on the head. You want to appreciate all your loved ones that you have here, and you want to make sure too that how can we keep supporting too? How can Badger fans keep helping? And I think that was a good reminder that Greg Gard put out there to again let people know what the story is about and what had happened, but how can we move forward and help, as you know, being a Badger fan and being a part of the Badger community is much more than just cheering for the team. It's about supporting people off the court as well.
There's no way to really smoothly transition from that. So we're going to go to our clip of the week and hear from Greg Gard.
Around these parts, there's only time for the best of the Badgers.
We don't know exactly where we are right now.
Why don't you own the Wisconsin football team?
We need to play better significantly.
They're spoiled rotten.
This is the clip of the week on the Jump Around.
Go someplace else. Go boo in a bar.
Yeah, it is. And for this week, our clip of the week is Greg Gard post Ohio State.
I thought right from the beginning we did not have the same mentality to us, aggressiveness to us, physicality to us. And Ohio State, they're much more aggressive, much more physical than we were. Set the tone early and were able to get that lead. So I didn't like how, like I said, how we started from both ends of the floor. I thought we were just not as, we didn't have the same bite to us that we've had over the last, you know, 2-3 weeks. So.
That video courtesy of great reporter John Stepp. Love John.
Thank you, John.
Obviously, audio couldn't quite get the perfect quality, but so it goes.
I'm not a jump scare guy, so it's the sounds that made me threw me back a little bit. So Jim, if you want to take this first, I gotta catch my breath real quick.
Sure. Good on Greg Gard. You can't allow your team to think it's okay. I expected that answer from him after the game. It's why he's a great coach. It's why you can feel confident that the team will bounce back. Like, you can be like me and be like, I'm frustrated as hell, and it is concerning that the team has that performance still in them in February. But at the same time, because of Greg Gard and Krabanoff and this entire staff and the players and some of the vets on this team, I don't think they're going to lay an egg. But I am still frustrated they did, and I'm happy to see that Greg Gard also frustrated.
Nobody wants to see those things happen, right? Nobody wants to see a loss like that. But I go back to what he had said at his very last answer against when they beat Michigan State. How do you enjoy this moment but also move forward? It's like you have to make sure that you turn the next page. We're already looking at film at Ohio State. Granted, probably they could have looked at more film, but it's still making sure that you turn, you know, you hold yourself accountable, you celebrate the wins, you process the losses, and you move forward. It doesn't matter how it happens or the wins or the losses, the process doesn't change. So I'm in the same boat too. It's not a great moment, but you know what? You got to move forward.
So I want to ask you guys real quick before we get to Twitter Portal and Ben Brust. What do you think is the biggest area that Wisconsin needs to improve in before the tournament?
I know you pointed this out on Saturday Scramble, and which you could also talk or come see us 10 to noon on Saturdays on 100.5 ESPN. You had said this is that you liked their rebounding. You liked the effort that they did against Michigan State.
They were phenomenal on the boards.
That was great. My concern is their front court, though. How strong is their front court going to be? What happens in a situation if Nolan Winter gets into foul trouble? What happens if Austin Rapp gets into foul trouble? You're a little top heavy in the backcourt, and you're already probably more on the Greg Gard has said, too, that they're not as physical. So that's where I'm starting to teeter a little bit in terms of the skepticism. The front court is what I'm looking at in an area for concern.
Jim?
All right, let's get to the portal.
Nothing concerns Jim. He's all in.
Love to hear it.
Just want to make sure we got time for everyone.
The Badgers Twitter portal.
Yeah, it's time for the Badgers Twitter portal now. Let's start with Pablo. You have on a Wisconsin Badgers hockey jersey.
ISO shot. Let's see. There we go. Yeah,
there it is. The big old motion W. Today is the gold medal match as we speak, going on between the United States and Canada, and there are 11 former and current Badgers competing for gold between the United States and Canada. Ken Hall suggests that the next Olympics should just pit the world against Badgers and alum. Mark Johnson's done an amazing job recruiting and developing talent. What do you got to say about the job Mark Johnson has done with Wisconsin women's hockey?
I mean, what hasn't been said? I mean, he is whoever you think the John Wooden or whatever of basketball, or you know, with Nick Saban of football. Mark Johnson's that for women's hockey. Mark Johnson is a legendary coach for women's hockey. He should be held up in the same regards to all those other legendary coaches. He, on top of all that, is a legendary hockey player. Miracle, obviously, being the movie that was made about his team and the Miracle on Ice team of 1980s. He was the star of that team, nicknamed Magic. So Mark Johnson is honestly one of the most influential people in the history of hockey. And it's great to see the support around this team. I'm in Milwaukee, and the WTMJ ESPN Milwaukee studios are here, and everyone is gathered around a giant TV watching the game over lunch. So the people are behind it. People are excited, rightfully so, and a lot of proud Badger alums and just Badger fans out there.
GOAT. That's all it is. You stole the words right there. What I love the most is his composure each and every year. He's never changed. He's always kept it the same, and the players appreciate it. He's adaptive too, but it's just about how he carries himself, man. It's about how he encourages the players to enjoy the to just enjoy it, man. Just to keep riding, just to embrace the process. And again, it's just how he goes about it that I just love. I would love, though, Badgers versus the World. That'd be sick.
Yeah, I would not complain. Mark Johnson, the best out there. Currently 0-0 at the end of the first period, if you're wondering about the score. And now moving on to Ant Wright, one of the bigger Badgers fan accounts that isn't specifically talking about the Badgers. He's responding to Seth Davis, saying that Michigan's win over Purdue sets up an excellent matchup with Duke this Saturday. Then you have Arizona and Houston, top 10 matchup, tipping off tomorrow as well, or in 2 days, I should say. And now Ant Wright saying, watch the Final Four be St. Louis, Vandy, Clemson, and Wisconsin. That begs the question for me, if the Badgers aren't in the Final Four, do you guys really care who makes it at all? Like, do you hate watch teams? Are you rooting for teams? Like, do you care who makes the Final Four if it's not Wisconsin?
No, I mean, that's why I was the way that I was with the Super Bowl. I was like, Bears are in it. I'll kind of enjoy it, but eh. Like, if my teams aren't truly in
bracket.
It,
I'll... I want my bracket to do well. If it goes Badgers first, if the Owls are in it, which I don't think they'll be this year, obviously I want the Owls to do well right there with the Badgers, and then my bracket. And... with all due respect to Ant, I worry that the days of even a Wisconsin getting to the Final Four could be done. That last year was pretty chalk. With the NIL, I think that teams like Wisconsin, you see it in football, but in basketball, could end up being kind of stuck in this weird middle. That you could get a random team like FAU come out of nowhere and surprise people, and you still, you know, with the right mix of players. Because of their conference, and they get the right seeding, and everything pops off, they get to the Final Four. But that was still early stages NIL. And now I look at, I just think the Blue Bloods and the teams with the most amount of money are the teams that can get the best players, and the Cinderellas are going to die in the Elite Eight and not really make the Final Four anymore.
I just want to challenge this real quick. Matt LePay, who was on Wilde and Tosh last week too, he clear-cut had said they operate like the Brewers, but based off of how they evaluate talent, that Wisconsin men's basketball is very good at evaluating talent, and that is why they've been so consistently, I guess, successful or relevant in a way too, where they've always been able to put out a consistent... But they put out a consistent product. They've been successful.
Right. Consistently not making the Final Four.
They haven't made the Sweet
16. The Brewers don't make the World Series, which I think is the equivalent of a Final Four. And I think you're right. LePay is right. Like, the Badgers can crank it out and be a Sweet 16, maybe once in a while Elite Eight team. And I worry that in general could be their ceiling, because I think the NIL is going to create a world where teams could just have NBA talent upon NBA talent.
That's fair.
I'm very curious to see how this year shakes out, because last year was incredibly chalky. If this year is really chalky, because the one seeds have been a little volatile. Like, Wisconsin has beaten the overall number one seed in Michigan. So does that speak to the strength of the one seeds this year? But if they all end up in the Final Four again, then we're having some different conversations. I still think Wisconsin can make it. We shall see. Quickly now, before we get to Ben Brust, from our guy Scary Alvarez.
Oh, man.
Ranking his the worst Wisconsin losses, according to him, by how mad he was after each of them, starting with Indiana, USC, to Nebraska, Purdue, and at 5, Ohio State. Which loss for Wisconsin basketball made you the most mad this year?
Well, it's got to be Indiana. For me, it's only Indiana and Ohio State. The other ones I was not so much mad about. Those are just like, all right, I don't love it. I don't love how that went, or I hate losing this team. But Ohio State in February just getting worked is terrible. And then the Indiana game, I was mad, but not at the Badgers.
Purdue, you're better than that. you could have played Purdue a lot better than the way that you played them here at the Kohl Center.
Well, they get an opportunity. They get a chance to end the season against Purdue. For me, Indiana, that was ridiculous. I hated it. That was absurd, patently absurd. And that's it for the Twitter portal.
All righty. Well, we're going to get to Ben Brust here in a minute, but I do want to tell everyone about Steinhoffels. It's your final chance to save big at Steinhoffels doing their President's Day extended sale. Right now, take at least 10% off store-wide on dining sets, bedroom furniture, living room, and more. But hurry, this really is the end. And here,
wait, what?
No. And here's something fun. Stop in and test rest a Beautyrest Black mattress, and you'll be entered for a chance to win a dream vacation to Hawaii. Big savings, one last shot, and a trip to paradise on the line. Only at Steinhoffels. Don't miss it. Stop, shop in-store or online at steinhoffels.com. All right, we'll get to Ben Brust on the other side.
Welcome back. Let's go right to the Weather Center with Abe.
I see nothing but savings for the entire week, and I mean big savings for everyone. 10% off sofas, 10% off dining, bedroom, and so much more. George, it's going to be a glorious week of savings. But don't wait. These savings won't be here long. We have a cold front coming in next week.
Sounds like a great week to get out and enjoy Steinhoffel's President's Day sale.
That's right. You can't stop out Steinhoffels and join their President's Day sale. A little behind the scenes, Ben Brust popped his head in the studio that I am in, but we didn't know which one would be better for him to actually be heard and not have an echo going back and forth and being able to see Ben Brust, you know, since
just sit next to
Ben
each other. Just share a mic.
What's that?
Sit next to each other and share a mic.
There we go. Bruce Springsteen style. So, Pablo Iglesias, Jim Rutledge, this is the Jump Around. We're bringing in Ben Brust. And, Ben, I don't want to say I want to get this out of the way, but I want to start with the Howard Moore movie I wrote at night because I want to talk Badger basketball. I don't want this hanging over our head. It was a remarkable movie. It was moving. It really revealed to people who Howard Moore is as a person and the impact he's had on people throughout his coaching career, his life. And the moment that stood out to me, and I said it earlier, was when in the movie they talked about some pastors coming up from Madison over to Michigan to kind of be there with him after he lost his wife and his daughter. And they do their prayers for the wife and the daughter, and then he reminds the pastors they need to pray for the woman who was the other side of the accident and caused the accident and her family. And that really drove home truly what a undeniably remarkable person Howard Moore was. You had a chance to obviously know him a lot more than any of us did. I talked to him a few times, but I've only heard amazing things about him, which is rare. Usually you hear someone say something about someone, but never about Howard Moore. Always was. He's like the best person around.
Yeah, I mean, I was so grateful to be there for the Thursday premiere in Madison. I saw it about a year ago as well. And anytime I can see Howard or relive his story. And again, he's still making progress every single day as much as he can. And he was at the premiere on Thursday in person. And just to see him and the progress that he's made since he was at, you know, spoiler alert. I mean, we all know, as it was tweeted out, that he was on the floor at the Kohl Center. Matt LaPay introduced him. And to see the progress he's made from that day to where I saw him last Thursday was incredible. You know, every person that's encountered Howard has a story. For me, being a kid from the suburbs of Chicago and Howard having the Chicago ties and whatnot, Wisconsin recruited me as a sophomore. I went to their team camp. I had a great team camp, but they only had two scholarships at the time. And those ended up getting taken up. So I moved on with my life. And then when I decommitted from Iowa, when the coach got fired, next thing I know, I'm opening up my recruitment and Howard's there. He's in my ear. Bo Ryan comes to my house and then I take a visit up there. And then when I was able to take an official visit after going to Boston College, USC, you know, you go, like I did the recruiting process twice, which was a pain in the ass. But Howard was my lead recruiter, yet he was transparent telling me that, hey, I'm not going to be here next year. I'm taking the head coaching job at the University of Illinois Chicago. Despite that, was there the entire way until I was able to officially commit and sign after some legal stuff of not being able to play on scholarship the first year. But what stood out to me was I was driving up Observatory, and it was finals week. It was a beautiful day in Madison, and we're driving around, windows down. You know, he's treating this like I've never seen Madison. He was just so excited to drive me around. And we passed by Liz Waters, which at the time when Howard was in school was a women's only dorm. And he goes, that right there, that's where I met my wife, Jen. And you go on all these visits, and to like have that memory ingrained in my head. And I was able to tell that story after the premiere last year to his mom, Trennis. She was telling his teammates the next day, like it's those and everyone's got those stories, right? And so Howard was the best. And from a personal standpoint, really, really, really sucked. The accident happened when they were heading on Memorial Day up to see his wife's family in Michigan. And Josh Gosser got married the Friday of Memorial Day weekend in 2019. So we all found out the news Saturday morning after the wedding. So devastation, obviously, hearing about the story. But I was living in Madison and working alongside you, Jim. And I had a meeting out on the west side. Howard was, you know, at that point, you know, had burns, but he was able to move around, taking care of Jarrell. Rashard Griffith was around. And I was going to meet with Howard at his house, and he was at some doctor's appointment. So I'm sitting outside his house, not able to connect with Howard that day because of his doctor's appointments. And, you know, we get on the phone. He's like, hey, don't worry about it, man. Like, I'll catch you next week. Like, how are you? How are you doing? And I'm like, what the heck? Stop. Like, how are you this great of a person? I want to ask about you. And so we went on our separate ways for that day. And unfortunately, that next weekend or before I could see him again is when he had the cardiac arrest, in which, you know, he's been in a state that he's been recovering in ever since. So that's eaten me up from that day forward. And I don't go a day without really thinking about him or remembering his presence. And, you know, I would have loved to have seen him, but he's fighting in his condition that he's in right now, and he's getting better. And I'm really excited that because of the success of the movie in the Madison area and the documentary, that it's moving to Brookfield, at the Marcus Majestic Theater in Brookfield. So I will be on a panel after the 4 o'clock showing on Saturday, at the Majestic. Myself, Matt LePay, Brian Butch, and have plenty of more Howard stories to share. But just it's a touching movie, and he's an amazing man. And I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you or at this job if he didn't embody the spirit that he had about Wisconsin, about, you know, being a Badger. He was a connector. He really just had a way of connecting with people and making them feel special. And it was a no doubter, even though I knew he was leaving, that this was home for me.
Ben, I loved the story that you shared, too. And what stuck out to me from seeing this was when he invited one of the teammates over to get a haircut. And it was really more of a check-in because he knew he could read you pretty well. He wanted to always check in and have those relationships. Again, I've gotten to learn more and more, whether it was from the moment that he was on the Kohl Center floor to this moment. Just seeing this all play out, though, from the response to the documentary to just getting more awareness out there, what do you think has been the most powerful thing for you as the documentary continues this run?
I mean, the most powerful thing is just seeing him get better. In the documentary, you learn how, you know, many people in his state after the cardiac arrest don't get out of the state he was in. And he's just such a fighter that he wasn't going to quit. And against all odds, he's still here and he's getting better. And there's things happening behind the scenes to give him the best care possible and a home that is accessible for his parents and him to get around. And some wonderful stories of former teammates and Stan Van Gundy and what he did with his generosity. Obviously, I can't share. Just know that, like, I have never heard of something so gracious in my entire life of what Stan Van Gundy was able to do when he found out about the long-term care that was needed for Howard Moore. So the whole thing, I mean, in you just got to see the documentary so you can see the people around him, and it ranges from former players, teammates, coaches, anybody who's in that documentary will show you how powerful and how awesome of a man he was and is. And so Just really excited that we're able to grow this documentary out to Brookfield and show, I mean, there's more Badgers in Milwaukee area than there is Marquette alums, believe it or not. That's how big the institution is at Wisconsin. So we're really looking forward to showing that in Brookfield moving forward starting Saturday.
Or no easy way to transition. I'm just going to transition to Badger basketball. I was high going into the Ohio State game. So on the outside looking in, and Greg Gard, I think, had a very appropriate answer afterwards of, like, he just was disgusted with the team's effort, which, you know, I get it happens, college kids. In February, I don't love it. I still believe this team has a lot of potential, but as a player, you've had those games, I'm sure, as a team. What do you do to kind of get back, and how do you excuse it, or how do you just move on from it? Do you just chalk it up, be like, that's just bad, and we're going to move on?
Yeah, I saw Greg yesterday, actually, at an event we were at. And, look, he knows the talent on his team. You know, they ran into a desperate Ohio State team on the road after, you know, the highest of highs. I don't think it was something where, like, this team wasn't, like, reading the press clippings or whatnot. They just didn't show up. And Coach Gard made that very clear, as you said, Jim. And the great news about where they're at right now is they have plenty of opportunity right now. If there's one thing that is in the root of my head right now is you guys showed a list of your Twitter portal of, like, the losses that hurt you and whatnot. To me, it's not even any on the list. It's the early season ones, because in the college basketball world nowadays, they've gone away from picking teams and how they're doing and seeding them. You used to see the last 10 games. It's not a thing anymore because you have all these teams that are focusing on getting as many high-level non-conference games earlier in the season. And in Thanksgiving, getting blown out in that championship game, coming to Fiserv Forum and losing to Villanova, which is the tournament team. They're not bad losses, but when you add up the other five that were on the list that you guys showed, it puts them in a spot where we know how talented they are. We know they can beat anybody. They obviously beat Michigan on the road, beat Illinois on the road, and smacked Michigan State. And Ohio State, bad game, you flush it, you move on. But overall, the way I look at it is they had found themselves on that 7 line, right? And this next 3 weeks is going to be super critical for them to stack wins, because you don't want to see a team like them. Now, can they? Absolutely, right? If they're an 8-9 seed and they win their first game and they're matched up with not Michigan, because they probably wouldn't put them there from a Big Ten standpoint, but it's Arizona, it's UConn, it's Duke. Like, would you rather face that type of team? You know, it's pretty top heavy in terms of the top 5-6 teams in the NCAA. Yep. Or would you love to get to that 7 seed or 6 seed where you got a 3 or a 2 seed and they become the BYU of last year, of a team that is just super talented, and then you face them, you're like, damn, how were they that seed? Because they're that type of quality team. So I think these next 3 weeks are critical, because you can't take back the past. They have great quality wins, but they need to stack some moving forward here and flush that Ohio State game away, because I think they're capable of a lot. Right. Boyd's taken huge steps from when he first arrived on campus, talking to Andy North in the tunnel during the Michigan State game, of him and Blackwell going at each other in practice, which is great. But the speed in which they were playing, you know, how he was playing, and now having those two as staples for the most part, other than Ohio State, knowing what you're going to get. Yep. They could beat anybody, but I'd like them to have to beat the anybody in the second weekend.
Ben, our teammate Mark Tauscher said that you were the person who convinced him to not make the Final Four declaration. You kind of persuaded him to hold off on that for now. What's holding you back right now? What do you think could push you over the edge to believe that this Badger team could be Final Four caliber?
Seeding. It's the exact same conversation I was just having, because, like I said, like, they're capable of going to a Final Four with the talent that they have. Part of it is draw, part of it is luck, part of it is so many different elements, and you can control what you can control as a team, and that's what your schedule is, how you play the rest of the way to get yourself out of that 8-9 line. It's getting kind of crowded in there. Even if they get to a 7 seed, they play a 2 seed, I feel pretty good about that, right? Like, we saw the BYU Badger matchup. They have that type of talent to upset anybody. Not to say that they couldn't beat an Arizona, a UConn, or a Duke in the second round, but you don't want to have to put yourself through a gauntlet when you've seen this team have sort of those ups and downs. And again, it's all about right now for them is continuing to regain the confidence that they had when they won those two games last week against Illinois and Michigan State. Great opportunity against Iowa, who's not a bad team by any means, but a team that you have to take care of like you didn't take care of a USC at home, right? Like this is that type of game that you need to grow from that USC loss, knowing you have the talent, knowing you have the wins, knowing you have those big-time resume wins, and just start winning games. Because the more you win games, you're going to stay out of the muck of the teams that run into – like they just ran into two ranked teams and won. There's somebody next to them in the 8-9 line right now, I can't tell you the teams by name, that probably have their gauntlet of really tough games coming Saturday and Tuesday of next week or Wednesday of next week, that if they stack these wins, they fall – those teams fall behind the Badgers, and the Badgers, even with that Ohio State loss, are still able to compound what they did last week and get off that 8-9 line. So Final Four talent, need to see them take care of business. And basically, once I see not even the draw, but making sure they're playing the way that we know they can play on a consistent level at the right time, which I think they have the ability to do. We know they have the ability to do it. Now it's about execution. Then I'd be willing to put the stamp on it.
Nick Boyd, we had you on early to talk about him. Obviously, I've been in on him early, bias with FAU, but he's been as advertised. He's climbing up the record leaders for most 20-point games in a season already for the Badgers. I don't know if he'll get all the way to the top, but he's only like one or two games away from having the most in one season. And obviously, he's developing more and more as a true point and a player in the system. How important is his experience having played in Sweet 16s and the Final Four? That's got to matter when it comes to the tournament time. The Badgers haven't always had that.
It's huge. It's 100% huge, because I think you also have the hunger from like the Nolan Winter and the John Blackwell. And I look at Blackwell as a guy where like in any moment he's never phased, right? Like down 10 against Illinois, he hit some massive shots. And I saw some things from him and Nick Boyd against Illinois where I was like, all right, now I'm like, my eyes are open, right? They start the second half against Illinois in the first 6 minutes. Illinois is one of the tallest teams in the Big Ten and across the country. And part of my fear is when the Badgers run into those really big, tall, athletic teams, how will they be able to compete? Because you think back to BYU, who has a big that's not super talented but super athletic, right? Like, and he made a huge impact against mm-hmm. them. So when I saw them get blocked to the rim, then start using their body, coming to 2 feet, kicking out to Austin Rapp, like that's the growth that I've seen from those two guards, that with the experience of Nick Boyd and kind of that like stone cold level always here, John Blackwell, guards can carry you in March. And those two have the ability to do that with their A, experience, and B, I would say Blackwell has experience. He just needs to taste the Sweet 16. And if I always say, if you get to the Sweet 16, it's always wide open, because if you're playing well and you have the talent like the Badgers do, you're telling me you want to play against this Badger team with the talent that they have at the guard position? No, thank you.
So the other thing with that, I did have this theory that I'm worried that with the NIL, and this could just be reaction, last year was very chalk, I worry that teams like Wisconsin and other teams, Elite Eight might be their new ceiling, that it might just get harder, because you mentioned earlier there's like clear top five teams and then everyone else. And obviously basketball is basketball. That's what's great about it. You can upset anyone. I just worry it might be another 15 to 20% harder for other teams that are not the big payroll teams to make the Final Four, because of how deep these teams can get. Especially, I mean, you can just look in the Big Ten. Michigan, I think, has a great coach, and they have a really good roster. They're not unbeatable, but it does seem like the money can really separate in basketball.
Yeah, they're deep. Like, they're five guys that they started good, and they also bring off three really legitimate guys, so they don't miss a beat when they bring on other players. I think it's somewhat fair, but you also got to remember, like, UConn lost to Creighton yesterday, right? So even though that we're not in March Madness, like there's still an element of they are collegiate athletes. They're not perfect. But again, like you mentioned, those, I would say Arizona and Michigan are the two teams that I would put on a different level. I think Duke is beatable. I think UConn is beatable. Iowa State away from Hilton is beatable. Like Texas Tech just lost their best player who was, they had beat Arizona on the road. So that's where I'm saying, if you can get to that six line somehow, some way, I really like their chances of winning their first round matchup and then playing a three seed. And I'm like, yeah, this Badger talent, after like I said, I think they have the potential to be the BYU of like, holy cow, depending on matchups, right? There's a luck of the draw. I think they have the chance to kind of be like, we're so talented that you really don't want to face us in the round of 32, based off the way that they can have these scoring outbursts and neutral site. Badger fans travel pretty well. Obviously, last year wasn't great from a draw of where perspective, but typically wherever they play, Badger fans show up. And I'm actually rooting against Fiserv for them because I think we played at the Bradley Center, and since then it was losing to Iowa State in the round of 32. And then obviously there was one more in there. Why am I blanking? I know they lost to Villanova this year at Fiserv. But again, I just maybe – I always loved the games when we played. We went out to Tucson. We went out to New Mexico. Sometimes it's really good to get away. Now, for our team, when we went to the Final Four my first year in Milwaukee, I was really excited because we were a two seed, right? Like we were playing, we had talent. We won 16 games to start the year, then won 8 in a row. And that was huge for us. But for this team, I think if they can get like a refresh and go out somewhere and just sort of play their game, I kind of like that for them. I kind of hope they're somewhere warm or somewhere far away because I think that could be a benefit to them.
Ben, I'm not going to
lie. Last thing I have for you. Let me ask Pablo. Last thing I got for you, Ben, is what is – you talked about you like what they did against Illinois with the taller players and they've been burned in the past with some of the bigger teams. What is the matchup or type of team that does worry you for a bad matchup for the Badgers in a tournament?
Somebody who plays just as fast as them and is athletic. Like if they saw Arkansas, I would hate it. I would hate it. Okay. Arkansas can score. They're big. They're athletic. Like those types of teams. Because it's crazy is like I was talking to Joe Krabenhoff at the Howard Moore doc and before they played Michigan State. I was like, believe it or not, I never thought I'd say this. You need more possessions than you have, you know, against Michigan State because it typically used to be, all right, let's grind it out against Michigan State. I'm like, no, they cannot keep up with you guys offensively. Get as many possessions as possible and you will win that game. So slower teams I'm not as worried about because they can – the Badgers have the ability to speed up games versus like we That's used crazy, to be able yeah. to just slow things down no matter what. You can't really slow this team down. And even if you did – they have enough offensive firepower. I wouldn't want to see a team similar to them with more athleticism.
Ben, that is the perfect segue into what I had in mind because, first off, you got a shout-out from Frank during the national broadcast as well, I believe. And then he also said that that watching this Wisconsin team play compared to you guys, he's like, we played so slow. So I want to ask you if – your Badger Final Four teams went up against this Wisconsin squad. Who would come out on top? How would you guys go up against each other in that matchup if we were to put these two teams on the court?
So I think that despite how good their guards were, no one would be able to have an answer for Frank and Sam. Sam on the wing, Frank in the post. We had guards that we would play the lane lines. We would not let Nick Boyd get to his left. Gosser would guard Blackwell. Blackwell would get his, but Gosser's length would be able to disrupt him. There's no doubt in my mind we would beat this team. Of course, now I'm starting to sound like the old head where the way we played was better. But like I genuinely believe the
I'm
way
with
we're
you
constructed.
Though, Ben, like,
versus,
I mean, Decker is Decker would be a big on this team. I mean, just on that, and he's obviously super athletic.
And he's skilled. He can cut, he can dunk. Like, you know, I have a teammate here, Greg Matzik, who's running on the treadmill, texting me about some of our games. And, you know, I saw a zone against Ohio State, and I was like, a zone? Man, I love zones. We against Baylor in the Sweet 16 after they beat Creighton by 30, they were long, they were athletic. I remember thinking, like, how am I going to be out there with those guys? But then we absolutely put on a clinic. I hate when I watch a Badger team struggle against zone because it's the easiest thing to go against if you just know how to play with your teammates. And again, that's an advantage we have as well that they don't, is the time played with each other versus this transfer portal era.
Ben, we appreciate the time. Thank you.
I know I'm cutting out. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Ben.
All right, that is Ben Bruss for Pablo Iglesias. I am Jim Rutledge. This has been The Jump Around on ESPN Madison and ESPN Milwaukee's YouTube stream.
Peace.